following episode will touch on topics such as pregnancy, miscarriage, and fertility issues based solely on personal experience. If you have any concerns about any of the previously mentioned, please seek medical advice for your own professional diagnosis. Hi everyone, and welcome back to another What Atta Said podcast, where we share our candid conversations about life, love, and everything in between. My name is Antoinette, and I am missing my three lovely co-hosts today, which is a little bit sad, but I wanted to reintroduce you guys to my fellow co-host for today, my lovely husband, Jerome.
Hello, everyone worldwide.
Mr. listening worldwide. To this,
wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Hello again.
Hello again. It's your second time on the podcast. How does it feel second time around?
I just can't believe you guys didn't invite me back sooner. I'm so hurt. My
Facts.
Heart.
Facts. Are you nervous at all, or how are you feeling?
I feel good. I mean, I think the topic is a deep topic, so
yeah,
I'm a little bit nervous with that. Hopefully, I can articulate myself well. That's the main thing, but it should be fine.
You'll be fine. So let's loosen you up a little bit then, if you're feeling a little bit nervy, let our Ates and Kuyas get a little bit reacquainted with the Santuicos, Jerome and I. I have a little bit of a question for you as an icebreaker, and I thought about this 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
So what is, name one or a few, however many you like or can think of, quirks that the other does around the house?
I don't know if you're going to edit this out, but
are you going to air me out right now?
The funniest thing that Antoinette does, which you will never experience, is if she needs to fart, she makes two sounds, once before and once after. The first sound before she farts is, huh! And then she farts, and then the sound after is, oh.
You went
That's
there.
Legit. That's legit. Like, you, no one will ever experience that. Maybe some other few people, but apparently it took her, What did you say? It took you like a year or something before farting in front of me.
3 years, honey.
3 years.
3 years.
She was backing that up for that long.
Yes.
And then she even said something like, what did you say? You're explaining how you, after every date or whatever, when I would leave, you'd say, oh, thank God, like, he's left now. I can let him all out.
Yes. It's really true. Like, you drop me off. I'd run into my room or wherever, and I'd freaking let it rip, man.
It That's took me nasty.
It took me 3 years to fart in front of you. I had already moved out of home. And then after that, you just opened up a can of worms. And I was like, dude, you asked for it. Because you were like, why don't you ever fart in front of me?
Meanwhile, I'm like, pull my finger. And boom. It's like a fart sound effect.
Oh my gosh. Now they really, really know. Okay, let me name.
Welcome to the podcast. Welcome.
Farts within the first 2 minutes. Let's do one of your quirks. Okay, so you're going to air me out like that. You're going to do me dirty like that. Jerome, when he likes to sleep, cold or hot weather, he will pull his pants down a bit.
It's just comfortable.
No. Okay, this is not where people think it's going. The backside, he will pull down his pants on his backside to reveal his entire butt crack. And I tell him, why in the world do you do that? Because, like, sometimes I go in for a hug, which is rare. I don't spoon, but I'll go in for a hug and I'm scared that my hand is going to go somewhere it need not go. And his excuse is, would you like to explain your science?
I really don't know sort of why I do it. I think I do it sort of to annoy you. And I just got used to it. Also, I'm kind of gangster when I sleep. So I'm just
put your pants down. Well, you told me one time, especially when it's in the warmer months, it ventilates.
I just exhaust air. I breathe in air, exhaust it at the back end.
Oh my gosh.
That's weird, yo. No one's gonna invite me for a sleepover.
Yeah, no one's gonna wanna talk to those two. Oh, the Santuicos are all about farting and having their pants down. Oh my gosh. Whew, okay, well, that took a turn very quickly. I didn't know that's how it was going to go. Should we give a little rundown on what we're going to be talking about today? So our topic for today is Jerome and I starting our family, or brackets, trying. Are you ready to have a chat? It might get a little bit deep.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Surprise, by the way, to the people who didn't know.
Yes, yes. Surprise. We've been trying to start a family. We'll get more into it. But yeah, this, some of the things that we're going to be mentioning throughout this podcast, we haven't actually opened up to very many people about, probably just our immediate family and a small handful of friends. So it's going to get a little immersed, if I do say so myself, from my side at least, but let's just dive right in, shall we?
Yeah. Cue the music.
Okay, for those who don't know or just need a very quick recap on Jerome and I, Jerome and I have known each other since childhood, since we were a wee lad and wee gal. And then we eventually became very good friends throughout high school because we were in a youth group together. We were best friends. You took me to my year 12 formal when a guy broke my heart. You stepped in like the hero.
It's like the second choice.
No! since then, we've been together for 12 years, and I actually had to go back the other day and ask you
Not since then. I mean, like after.
Oh, yes, after that. 12 years, I had to ask you. I thought we were on 11, but we're on 12 years, and 3 years out of those 12 years, we have been married.
Yes.
Married life.
3 years.
Going almost, on 3 years in November, so we're in our third year of married, you could say. We're both in our 30s. I had to ask you the other day. No, you asked me, actually. You were like, honey, how old are you? And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm 30. I turned 30 this 30? Year.
What? Oh, my wife was 26 or something.
Hey, like, wait, don't go
looking. I thought I'm 26 as well.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. So we're both in our 30s, and I'm going to be honest, I've been feeling the itch for a while. You probably know that about me. The baby itch.
Oh, yeah.
Clucky. I have always wanted kids. I knew that about myself for the longest time. And that was something that we both wanted, I guess, very early on. We both knew that about each other. So what made you realize, was there a moment, was there a point in time where you realized you wanted to start our family?
There wasn't necessarily a moment. Obviously, we talked about it together, what our plan was, getting married, waiting a while or a year before starting. Yeah. So besides our own planning together, when I knew that I wanted to start a family, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of factors into it. It's not just one moment. I mean, to give one real example, there was this comedian who I really liked back in the day, and he had one special I'd watch a couple times. Yeah. And it was about like having kids, and I found it really funny because he was sort of making jokes about not having kids.
Okay.
And then I rewatched it, and I just thought, oh, this isn't really that funny anymore. Like, my tastes have just changed, right?
Okay.
That's like one small factor, not all because I watch this comedian, not want to have kids.
Okay. So like your view,
My view on the
discussion of kids changed?
It just changed, yeah. It's like cheese, you know, it got better with age.
Okay.
Yeah. Being older as well, there's things that are more important than, I guess, myself. I just want to grow together. We have a lot of love to give. Yeah, but I think it's just, there's no real moment.
Yeah.
When we realized that we want to have a kid or start a family or try.
Yeah. It was a discussion that we had very many times, even before we got married. You know, what would be the next step after we got married? But yeah, like you said, we were pretty unanimous on the fact that we didn't want to have kids straight after getting married or having our wedding. We wanted to at least breach that 1 year anniversary mark. So we did. And I feel like we kind of tickled over the 1 year because we were still you know, we were still a little bit hesitant about deep diving into that very serious and realistic discussion because we were already at that point where we're like, okay, we're here at the 1 year mark. Let's have the discussion. And even then we kind of still went back and forth on the idea. It was a weekly discussion in our household.
Yeah.
And from my perspective, at least, the breakthrough moment, if you will, was when I had a discussion with one of your friends, who is now a mutual friend of ours, who has kids but had a one-year-old at the time.
Mm.
And he said, just very point blank, you know, you'll never actually be ready. Mm. And no matter how much you try to prepare yourself financially, have a roof over your head, have a great flourishing relationship with your husband or your wife, you'll never truly be ready because there'll be obstacles that will come your way only as a parent.
Mm. And you're okay with that. You know, yes. Like you're okay with knowing that you will accept
those changes. So the breakthrough moment was realizing that and accepting the fact that you or I will never be 100% ready, 100% the best golden star parent there is out there. But just the acceptance of knowing that you'll try your best and this is what I bring to the table and this is what my hopes are for us, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And just knowing that we obviously have that mutual understanding and that mutual goal and that it's not dip-sided or one-sided at all.
And I also think it's part of our relationship to know that we accept and we'll test, and I guess what I'm trying to say is like we'll both know how much effort we're both giving.
Mm-hmm.
So when there is a time when we're both of us are tired or something like that,
mm-hmm.
or one of us is more tired than the other or has more stuff that they're doing,
mm-hmm.
has more going on, we know that the other will take some other workload, and vice versa. So we're more comfortable knowing that we can accept things, even if they aren't balanced. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I can see that because I knew I was ready for quite some time. The reason why I was a little bit hesitant on pushing the envelope a little bit more further with you is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I had a sense of hesitation on your part, and I'm not going to be forcing this life change, on you if you have some kind of hesitation. And if I do feel that there's some kind of a hesitation, I want to be part of that narrative and that closure for you to become ready. Yeah. So you might not say that you had a moment or anything like that, but I feel like I saw a change in you once we started opening up about those fears and the willingness to accept those challenges along the way and knowing that we are enough. And I think we said that to each other. You know, I said to you one night, you know, you're enough. You probably don't think it because human nature kicks in and we like to compare ourselves to that of others. Yeah, and definitely. Again, just knowing that we're both going to do a really good job and we're both going to be present. And I think I waited for you to have that moment within yourself to realize that for yourself and not me have to enforce that upon you.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Just a little backstory. We've, like I said, been married for going on 3 years now. We started trying to conceive at the beginning of last year. So we are well over a year of trying to conceive. It's been quite the journey.
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking when it kind of didn't happen the first or second or third month?
I was going to sort of ask you that. What was I thinking? I mean, I was okay with it not happening. Even like to this point, like I'm okay. I mean, it's out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes down, well, I guess we'll might talk about it a bit later on,
but
it just comes down to seeking the right help, the right medical,
professional help.
Professional help. Just some things aren't in your control, especially something like this, trying for a baby. It's not instant. It's when it happens, it'll happen. And like someone at work was actually told me, it'll happen when you least expect it. I was like, oh, and that's their story, you know?
Which is much, I guess if you equate it to anything else in life, you know, the saying goes as well with finding the right person. And a lot of people put that down to the fact that, you know, it comes when you least expect it or when you're not looking, because you have relieved yourself of that, the pressures of that, that binding, I guess, of wanting to fit a mold or wanting to have someone in your life or wanting to accomplish this particular thing at this particular age. So I can see where you're coming from in terms of, or where your workmate is coming from anyhow.
Well, how did you feel though with it not happening first, second month, third month?
I think I was really naive to the fact that it wasn't happening straight away. You know, hindsight is 20/20. I know better now because there are so many external forces or factors that play into being able to naturally and successfully conceive within a 3-month period, because I was much older than the statistic that I was looking at the time. I was on the contraceptive pill for very many years. And even though I understood that just, you know, weaning myself off of contraceptives would take some time to have my hormones back in balance, to have everything there, you know, working on their own naturally, I still was just, I don't know, I was still really shocked that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it except for like,
we go through all these thoughts like, yeah, we're ready, let's try. You know, our plan was a year to wait or whatever, like 13 months, 14 months.
Yeah.
Our plan was to wait. All right, this is going to happen. You talk about it so much. Then we try in that first month. It didn't happen. Why didn't it happen? We've been planning this for a year. But it's one attempt. So it's not, it feels like that year worth of planning and discussions and the discussions before then.
Yeah.
Kind of build up to this 1 month where it didn't work. In the second month.
Oh,
why isn't it going to plan? We planned this.
It just feels like, you know, the pinnacle, the peak is right around that corner. I don't understand. Like everything that we've been climbing up towards, we've been ticking all the boxes. We're mentally, financially stable and prepared for everything in this fairy tale discussion that we've had previously. Why isn't the story going as I thought it would, or as I've heard, or as I imagined? There's no other way to really explain it for my part except for that.
So what I want to ask is, after trying the first 3 to 6 months or whatever sort of period it took you, was there any time where you started worrying that it wasn't going to happen, or you started worrying about anything at all?
Yeah. It was definitely when I read an article and it said, you know, most women before their 30s will conceive naturally at the 6 or 8 month period. So it was definitely getting to the 6th or 7th month and it wasn't happening. And I just started reaching my slump. Because obviously you're trying to build this momentum. And even though like the waves are crashing on you, you're still trying to go against, you know, go with your momentum and trying to push through. And it just got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm hitting a wall now at this point. And I think I told you that. I use that very metaphor. I feel like I'm running myself into a wall and I don't know what to do. And I just thought to myself, am I now nearing that bell curve of that other statistic of women who cannot naturally conceive? And yeah, I did worry. I started buckling down on, you know, monitoring everything. I downloaded every app you could think of. I even tried manually monitor my temperatures, my tablets, my intake of water, how many hours I was getting of sleep, my ovulation, my bodily changes and things like that, even down to a piece of paper, so that I could take accountability for you know, trying to do everything that I could to really naturally conceive. And even then, I was just, I definitely reached a slump around the 6-7 months part. And
so how did you like deal with that slump?
I really don't know, except for that's when I really did start opening up to very few friends and family about my concerns. I'm so lucky that my mom is a nurse, and as much as she's so caring and loving and nurturing, she's very factual with me when it comes to the medical world. And that was really good for someone like me who just likes to hear the facts. Obviously, she didn't have the answers, but she was there to kind of talk me through, this is, for lack of a better word, this is normal. These things are a miracle of creation. You can't just expect it to happen tomorrow, or write down a date and that's the date that it's going to happen. So I really appreciated that. So if there's anything that I can think of that really helped me at that time get through was, just opening up to family and friends about everything.
It's tough to say too, I think, because there's people who who've been trying for 4 years or something, or real different scenarios where someone's decided not to have kids and now they're of an age where it's near to impossible to have a kid. So it's all different scenarios, but
You're right. I definitely thought about that too. And at the time, one of my favorite beauty influencers, Desi Perkins, some of you might know of her. She has I've
seen her in the flesh.
Yes, we've seen her. I talked to her. I yelled out, "Hi, Desi!" Desi!
Desi! Your pupils went small. It's like you're like, I don't know what, I don't, it's like, you grabbed my arm.
I was like, that's Desi. If you haven't heard of Desi Perkins, she has a makeup channel, but she also does lifestyle or home or just personal vlogs with her husband. And one of the things that they captured was obviously their difficulty with trying to conceive as well and their infertility issues. And during lockdown, when I started reaching that slump was when she actually announced that she was pregnant. So yeah, that was another thing that helped me through was just trying to not become complacent in my feelings of, oh, woe is me, having a pity party, because you know, there's people that are in much more difficult situations than we were. But also on that part, there was hope. It gave me hope, gave me a positive outlook. So this next part is a it might get a little bit difficult for us to talk about. Again, most of our friends and family will probably be finding this out for the first time via this podcast. Is this a bit jarring for you to start stepping into this next phase? Okay, yeah. So let's just jump in. This next portion might be a little bit difficult for us. So we really appreciate your patience with us as we try to get through this kind of emotional discussion. Obviously, Jerome and I have had discussions about this previously, but again, this is our first time kind of talking about it out loud, knowing that people are going to be able to hear this about us.
It needs to be like spoken about.
Yeah, because it definitely does.
It's not discussed as common as it is.
Yeah. And that's not to say that if you don't speak about it, then, you know, you're wrong. It's just there's misconceptions surrounding particular issues when it comes to fertility or infertility that more people need to be, let's say, educated on and more understanding about. So this next portion we're going to discuss is October of last year, I suffered a miscarriage. I was 7 or 8 weeks at that point. And I had not been feeling well for quite some time. So there was a flurry of things that were happening that I just had never experienced before with my body. I don't need to get into that. But how did you feel when you know, it kind of reached its peak and I was rushed to hospital. Was there any thought of yours? Did you have any thought that it could potentially be in regards to a pregnancy or loss?
I was thinking a lot of things at the time because October, I mean, one, we were in lockdown. Two, I couldn't physically be there in the hospital with you.
Yeah.
I'm in the car. You're in the parking lot. And it's really awkward to try to support you when it's a phone call and your phone's dying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I guess I won't keep her on the phone because it was very awkward just that physically being in that space. Also thinking about your health, I mean, it was a little while ago now. I did think maybe there's something wrong with the whole pregnancy, trying for a baby, because we didn't have a positive test at the time. So that was another thing too. So I didn't really think it was, I never thought of it being like a miscarriage. I thought maybe at the time there was a thought, oh, maybe she's pregnant, right? Maybe that's some sort of pain. I don't know all the different things that can happen. But it was just, it was just a really tough time. I can't really explain. It was just like, yes, I did think something was wrong. I don't know what it is. And then I couldn't be there with you. I don't know how you're really feeling sitting laying in a hospital bed. Your parents are calling you, then they're calling me. And I'm saying, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I really don't.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like, what was it like for you being in that situation, not knowing how you felt or what was going on physically by yourself as well?
Yeah, so just to go back to not having a positive read on a test, when we found out that we miscarried was pretty much essentially when we found out that we were pregnant. We didn't test because, like I mentioned before, at that point I was reaching up and down slumps with, you know, trying to track my ovulation, my pregnancy. I was spending a lot of money monthly on tests. For it to literally just be going down the drain. Literally, I'm peeing on a stick and it just gets thrown out. It's right, like so much money.
Yeah.
And so at that point, because I was in such a slump, I was like, I'm not going to test anymore until I have a very clear indication on that I have fully missed my period. And yes, I had been late for 2 weeks at that point, but a lot of things can happen to cause irregularities in your cycle. So I wanted to wait for a very clear indication before I tested. So yeah, we found out in the span of 20 hours that we were actually pregnant that time. So for me, when I was sitting in the hospital, it felt like a really out-of-body experience because I think I was just trying to recognize the symptoms. I was listening to the doctor. I was like, okay, you're telling me this, this, and this. But subconsciously, I think I knew where he was leading to. It really hit me, I think, more so when we went home and I was finally with you and I had to actually verbally relay everything that I had learnt by myself sitting there with the doctor. And even after I had to go to the doctor the next day and relay that information to you, not being able to have you there because of lockdown restrictions, I felt more affected the next day.
Yeah, because I guess it sunk in because you came out so late in the morning from the hospital. I thought it was like an hour and then it was hours and hours.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you're there by yourself and your doctor is feeding all this information into you, usually you would have a family member there. If you can, you would have a family member there. And that family member will also be able to kind of, in layman's terms, explain, you know, okay, well, this is what we're dealing with. This is what we do to move forward from here. A kind of just not suppress, but kind of help alleviate some of that stress and take away some of that thought process for you so that you can just sit in the moment and, soak it all in. But, I had to have that moment with you afterwards. Whilst playing the doctor because I was telling you.
Yeah, because I have questions. And then
you were asking me.
It's such a unique experience and unique in a negative way too, because I'm sitting in the car or driving, you yeah. tell me the news, I'm yeah. like, what? And it's
so instead of really having a doctor tell us both at the same time and both of us process it together, I had to tell you like it was instead of be able to have you there as a comfort for me.
And it's already sort of late for me to ask, well, so how are you? Are you okay with everything?
Yeah.
It's like, well, you probably were because you're on your own.
Yeah.
So I guess you are okay.
It's yeah, yeah.
Not a normal way to find out.
Yeah. How do you mourn something that you never actually knew you had or was there? Was the next step after getting all that information and all that verbiage out to you? What were you feeling in that moment?
Just making sure that you're okay, like physically for one, that like you weren't feeling ill or sick or feeling as nauseous anymore. Then obviously how you are emotionally, dealing with that news by yourself, that there isn't an answer of how to cope with that. I'm sure there is, you know, if someone studied something somewhere, they're a specialist in that, but it's just a lot to take in. But the small positive note I could take out of it was that, well, at least we know that pregnancy is a possibility, like it can happen.
You did say that.
So yeah, that's the main thing, like that's the main thing to focus, that I could focus on at the time. To be positive.
Yeah.
And then just knowing that you're okay after however long you weren't feeling well, because it was a while, you're off work for a bit. And so that's the main thing, as long as you're better. And, you're happy to keep trying and or however you felt.
Yeah.
On the right track.
So on that note, did the miscarriage deter you at any moment or any way from continuing to try to conceive, starting a family? Did it make you view our relationship or even me differently?
No, I wouldn't say like it deterred me in any way, like because it's I understand that with a pregnancy it's both people, you know, going through it.
But yeah, it's you absolutely.
Who it's the woman who physically has to bear that physical pain, the emotional pain, and I'm there to support you. So for myself, I just had to focus on the positive. Like, we can keep going, keep trying, because our plan is to have a baby, but it's when you're ready as well. Like, I'm here ready to go. Like, would you think the same thing? Like, did you think that I would be deterred from trying, or what was?
I know that, like, regardless of what happened, I know that you wouldn't see me differently or act differently around me, which I appreciate in you. However, I would be lying if I didn't think to myself, even in the smallest fraction, oh, what does Jerome think of me now or see me as? I did question that to myself. I didn't verbalize that to you because, it kind of sounds a little bit contradictory because I'm telling you, you know, I know that you wouldn't see me that way, but then I still had like little questions on my mind, but I didn't entertain it in any way. I just...
It was still a thought.
It was still a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I began seeing myself differently. Obviously, quite often what comes with miscarriage is those feelings of shame and disappointment and sadness, which is another thing that isn't talked about as much because of the stigmas that surround these very sensitive topics. However, it's very much there, and you read about it and you hear about it, but it's different when you're actually in the moment. You can't help but feel those feelings and have those thoughts regardless of who your partner is. You just can't help it because you think that it's going to go a certain way and it doesn't. And sometimes for some people, it does alter the way that they look at themselves and the way that they might view their partner. Lucky for us, we just kind of picked up where we left off. We were able to communicate our grievances with the process. And I think I did need a little bit of time. I did fall into a small episode of depression where I just, the next day, I remember just laying in bed and not wanting to be touched or not wanting to really be held. I think I cried with you for a little bit, but yeah, I think it was those feelings of shame, really.
Shame.
Yeah.
When you say shame, is it because you, is it shame in the sense that you can't do something, shame that you failed? Is that what you mean by shame?
Yeah, because you think that as a woman, I'm my body is built this way.
Yeah.
Because my body is built to carry a child. And so I questioned my being. I questioned why I particularly couldn't do that. What was wrong with me? What was I doing? What was I not doing? All of these things were running through my head. And because I didn't have any factual or scientific answer, there was nothing left for me to feel but shame.
Right, right.
That I couldn't do what I thought I was meant to naturally do.
Yeah, yeah, I see. So after like the miscarriage, did you feel any other anxieties or any fears?
Apart from the internalizing, I would definitely say that I started building this wall of social anxiety. I've never really had that, you know. You've known me for so long. People who don't know this journey about us will probably, after I say this, will probably pick up on some of those behavioral tendencies as I talk about them. But I didn't want to be around certain people or certain groups which could trigger sad, depressing thoughts for me.
Yeah.
And you picked up on that. And the way that I know that you picked up on that was because instead of telling me, oh, we've been invited to here, let's jot it down in the calendar, you actually began asking me, do you want to go?
Yeah.
And I would go through the process of, okay, when is it? Who's going to be there? How long are we going to be there? And 9 times out of 10, it was always a no.
Mm.
Regardless of who we were going to see, it might have even been some of our closest friends. I just didn't want to be out portraying myself to be a happy person at the time when I wasn't feeling happy.
Yeah.
And you know this about me.
You just wanted time, you know?
Yeah, I just wanted time. And I'm a true Aquarian, guys. I do not like being told what to do whatsoever. Mm. And I'm thankful that you obviously, without really specifying it at the time, you understood that, you know, this is just where she's at right now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because of the circumstance. So I'm not going to push her on anything.
Mm. Can I ask, was it weird for you, or I don't know if the word's weird, but was it awkward for you to deal with like myself going to events or get-togethers like solo?
Yeah.
She's like feeling, was that weird for you? Like me just going out or?
Yeah, whatever? Yeah. It was weird for me, not you going out, because I know that you would be able to deal with it in your own way. And I'm not going to be the master manipulator of how you handle that. I know that you would have handled that in a respective way if you were questioned.
Oh, she hates you. She hates everyone. So, yeah, obviously.
No. I think more of the anxiety was, if this keeps bubbling over, if this kind of snowballs, I wondered what the repercussions of what people would say, if they would start picking up on this, even though we hadn't told people, or we hadn't like said, oh, I suffered a miscarriage. That's not something that you tell the world straight away.
Yeah.
I wondered if it would snowball and people would then just come out and approach me. And I'm like, am I going about this a backwards way? What if it actually does the opposite of what I want? Instead of people leaving me alone, they might just, it might be an invitation for them to come and ask me, how are you? And then I'll spill over into this emotional mess. That was definitely an anxiety for me, but I knew at the time I had to do what was best for me.
Yeah.
And it was sad because I did feel like I missed out on a few things.
Yeah.
But I was doing what was best for me at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it, I guess I never really asked, but was it strange for you in the sense that, I guess like some of these events, you had other things going on, like you genuinely did have other things and you picked between one or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it sort of different, that I wasn't with you instead? Like, did you ever think to yourself, like, I'm dealing with my own feelings, okay. Jerome's dealt with it and he's okay, he's patient with myself, but why isn't he with me physically? Or did you ever feel like that?
No, actually. Oh, thank God. Yeah, no, I would have communicated that with you, but I really didn't feel like that. One, we were in lockdown, so we were with each other 24/7.
So you've had enough already. Yeah.
Two, I genuinely needed that space, and I love that you respect when I do need space, then you will give me that. Mm. Three, I know that, and I respect that you and I will always process things differently. We might feel like-minded in certain aspects in our opinions, but I know that I can't, and I don't want to control how you maneuver or deal or process with things. And it might be at an earlier time than I am. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, I might deal with things at a much quicker pace than sometimes you will be able to forgive or process certain circumstances. Yeah. So I, in that position, never wanted to hinder you from moving forward or continuing to live your life.
I think if the roles were switched, you know, and it turned out that my chances of impregnating is very low, mm-hmm. and like, because the roles are reversed and it's like sort of on me physically, mm. I'd be like, oh man, I don't want to go out, you know, like I'll sort of feel that way. But I guess in the same way, I wouldn't be sort of holding you back, you know, like if you want to do something that's cool, you know, I'll just keep to myself. I guess it's mutual the same way.
Yeah. And I'm not one of those people that need you there for you to show me that you care, because the few days after the miscarriage, you took work off, you know, you were there. Even while I was ill the few weeks prior to knowing that we miscarried and I was just not at my best, you know, you were there. And I know that 100% wherever you are, if you're amongst a whole group of friends or whatever, I know that you will handle that accordingly and tastefully. Is that the word? Mm. I don't know. Yeah. You know what I'm trying to say. Yeah. On the topic of social anxieties and me having depression and things like that, to switch it back to you, because obviously it's important to check in with your partner, did you feel that your mental health was tested, or did you feel changed in any way after the miscarriage personally?
To a degree, like, it changed, like, my mental health. I had to sort of make a shift from our goal being let's try for a baby to let's make sure that we're healthy as well. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure that you're okay. But in terms of my mental health, I'm just fortunate that I wasn't really tested in such a hard way that you were put through. Again, mm-hmm. it sort of goes back to, what if there's something wrong with me to is it called conceive a child for a guy? Conceive, or is it impregnate? I don't know.
To conceive, yeah.
So if it was back on myself, if it was a problem on myself, I definitely would have grown, because I'm sure, like, you would have grown through the miscarriage, mm-hmm. to be positive, to go through a difficult time, to be positive from it. But for myself, watching you go through it, I assume I got stronger, because just from looking after you physically, and obviously our goal to keep that on track.
Mm, yeah, I could definitely see that about you. You definitely...
And it's the easier path. Don't. Like, it's easier for me to be like, oh yeah, I'm fine. Because I didn't go through it. So I know we went through it together, but I'm not the one in the hospital bed. I'm not the one alone getting this news. Like, yeah, I am alone, like, in the car or whatever, but I'm not the one physically there in the tough spot going through this pain, not knowing how... what's happening with these doctors and tests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from the miscarriage, what has been, say, the hardest part of the journey so far for yourself?
Apart from the miscarriage.
If anything. It doesn't have to be as difficult as the miscarriage. I doubt anything else would be, but what else have you found to be hard?
Ooh, that's a good question. Like I said, the social aspect of it, trying to find ways to cope within those scenarios. But I guess because apart from, you know, the first thing that you think of sometimes when you say social settings is your friends and mm-hmm. being out and about with your friends or in group gatherings, but there was also a family aspect of that. And having worry about, is this something that we tell our immediate family? It was surely something that I told my mom, again, because she's a nurse. She was picking up on these little tidbits of not me not being well the weeks prior. So she was very much invested in my health at that point. But the social anxiety of your parents, really. Mm. Your parents are older than mine. Should we worry them? Is this something that we should tell them? I don't want them.
And I also don't want to treat like our like misfortune or whatever you want to call it. Mm. I don't want to treat it like news.
Yeah, as well. Yeah, yeah.
That's like, oh, by the way, that's it. Suffered a miscarriage. Anyway, you know, it's not. Yeah. And I guess that's, again, one of the problems. Like, it's not talked about a lot.
Yeah.
For a lot of different reasons. Like, one, it's no one wants to put a negative spin when you greet someone.
Yeah.
But I think you should be open to talk about it if you're comfortable.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah. So.
But we both knew that there was a worry there. I didn't want to worry your parents at all. I didn't want pity. I didn't want empathy. I didn't want to talk about it again. I didn't want to. I didn't want to bring it to light again. So when it came to that, I was just lucky that my mom again stepped in and was able to have that discussion. And I think we had a micro discussion with your parents about it after they found out through my mom, which was really nice because I think they probably maybe it was best for them to hear it that way from my mom. Because our parents are so close.
Yeah.
They're so, like, they go on holidays and we don't even know about it until they're going on a cruise plane.
As well. Like, they have a holiday coming up.
I know. They're going on a cruise together. They've gone so many places together.
And stuff.
Yeah. So, they've known each other for decades and decades, which is why we grew up together. So it was probably best that they hear it that way anyways. Because at that time, I probably wouldn't have portrayed the message as with as much clarity as maybe I would have wanted to give your parents.
I know it's such a common thing to say. Say if someone gets married, it's such a common like joke to say, when's the baby? Oh, just such a common thing to say. And it's lighthearted in the moment. But if it came from, like if it comes from my parents or one of my close friends, I don't see it as a negative thing. I see it as like a, they're putting pressure. I just see it as they just want us to have a family, you know?
Yeah, like totally.
I see it in like a, such a positive way, like because they want us to grow.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I didn't see it that way as well. Of course, we surround ourselves with great people. You have great friends. I have great friends, and our family, as we mentioned, are great as well. Yeah, I'm sure that if you know, they made a little comment here or there, are you pregnant yet? Or is there a baby in there yet? Or when are you guys going to, you know, get pregnant or have a baby? Are you guys thinking of having a baby? Which has definitely happened very many times before and after the miscarriage. It's you know, some of them didn't even know. Well, yeah, they didn't know about it. So it's not entirely their fault. I think the anxiety with that was I don't know if I'm in a healthy state to give them a constructive, not a constructive, a clear and concise response.
Yeah. You just internalize it a bit too much.
Yeah.
Like,
when's
the baby? Well, actually, we've been trying for a year. We actually had a miscarriage at this time.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling well. Really, like, actually, we've been trying, but you know, hopefully soon. And then it's you just give like this answer that doesn't sound as grand as all the efforts.
Yeah, totally. Because they have definitely asked us very many times before we even started trying to conceive after the wedding. It was like, okay, now is a baby. And back then it was like lighthearted and funny. But then when you go through something as difficult as a miscarriage, you surely do internalize everything and you become, you have this wall up and you, I think because the wall is up, you think that you've protected yourself from anything that could affect your mental health when it comes to discussions of trying to conceive, that when somebody does ask you, you're just kind of like shudder, like a deer in headlights. You're like, wow, did you just really ask me that? But really they're just coming from
a good place. Yeah, 'cause they want,
it feels like a personal attack. And I don't know why, but it just feels like it, because your glass house that you've tried to build around you to protect you is shattered. And you're just like, wait, how do I respond to that? And I think that's why I didn't want to put myself in social settings, because it wasn't so much what people would say to me, because I can't control that. It was more so, do I have the strength to deal with it? Do I have the strength to maneuver through this in a healthy way?
Just overly internalized.
Yeah. Like,
you're already nervous seeing these people.
Mm.
They're coming from a good place. You've known them for decades or over however long.
Mm.
And you just feel like, oh. Couldn't really handle that question right now.
Yeah, yeah. It is that.
Can I just say as well, I think for maybe a lot of listeners, I don't know about the demographic of listeners, like maybe some of this isn't as relatable, but if you imagine, say, you're with your girlfriend or boyfriend and then you break up and then you're heartbroken and something that would be relatable is, oh, how's your girlfriend?
You're like, oh,
how's your boyfriend? We broke up. He broke up with me. Like,
It's
I want to avoid seeing my friends and saying, like, that's,
yeah,
I know it's like that could be relatable. Like, that's sort of what it is, right?
It is, because you question, oh God, I hope they don't ask me about such and such, such and such. But deep down, you know, they might ask you about such and such. So you try to prepare yourself in every which way, and you try to make these mock scenarios or mock answers as to how you'll deal with it. And then when it does actually happen and they ask you, you just kind of retreat. You're like, whoa. I thought I was ready, but I'm not.
Yeah.
And now what do I do? Because I look stupid and... Yeah, it's very jarring. To flip this conversation, because it's been a little bit of a hard conversation, I don't want it to be a deterrent for anyone in the future, or if they're currently trying, you know.
And if you see Antoinette, just ask her, you're pregnant yet or what?
No. He's joking, guys. No. What has been the most rewarding part of this journey?
Most rewarding part so far? For us, obviously, is just getting the right help, the right medical professional help. Like it's difficult. Again, we internalize how come it hasn't happened. I can stay positive and think to myself, people try for years and years.
Mm.
Everyone's situation is different. I don't want to be insensitive to people who can't have children.
Yeah.
Going through whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the most rewarding part really is realizing, hey, it's not happening right now. Our plan isn't working, so what can we actually do to get it on track, right? We're on the right track but the wrong train. Let's get some help.
That's a good analogy.
And then
metaphor, sorry.
And then we see the specialist.
Yes.
And like physically, like we're sitting there in the chair and he's telling us, these are the tests you need to do.
Yeah.
Even at the time, it felt like we were already accomplishing something,
which
we were, right? Because we saw our specialist.
Yeah.
He said, these are the steps. He couldn't have laid it out any more clearer. Had all the paperwork and the lists of tests.
Yeah.
You need this, A, B, C, D. And he was just so, I guess, like, well-informed. And I guess he's a professional, right?
So yeah.
He's a doctor and gave us all the details. And he's done it before. He could have explained this, eyes closed.
Yeah.
And it was just, hey, look, we need the help, and this is it. And instead of the emotion of why can't this happen, it just turns into, oh, I can do these tests. We'll find out why.
Yeah.
And if there's something wrong, there's a treatment for it.
Yeah. So
that's already rewarding in itself.
Yeah. When
taking the right steps, the right positive steps.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yes, so we have started seeing a fertility specialist. And already I feel like just from my end, that has relieved so much tension and so much of the internalization within myself off of me.
Yeah.
Just knowing that maybe it might be me, I don't know, but just knowing that regardless of what the issue is here, if there's an issue, there's someone there to help. And now that we're being a little bit more proactive with getting that help, is going to be so much more healthier on our mental health and our relationship and our growth through this process.
Yeah.
From my end, the most rewarding part of this journey is knowing that we haven't even reached the most rewarding part of this journey, which is eventually our hopes and dreams coming into fruition, which is having a child. And knowing that this is not all for naught, and we're going through this because we have a main objective, we have a main goal, and that's to start our family. Yeah. And we have not, even though it might sound like it, or sometimes it might feel like it, we have not lost any hope within that. If there's any advice that we can give here, because I don't really want to tell people, again, like we said in the disclaimer, this is not a handbook on how to deal with it. This is just solely based on our personal experience. But if there is something that, a little ticket that we could leave somebody who needs to hear it out there, it would be to obviously seek the support and love of those who are around you. But if you sorely want it, if this is something that you know you're ready for, and if you can go through the hurdles, and if you have readied yourself in that aspect, go seek that professional medical help to relieve some of that tension off of you and your husband or your wife or your partner, because it's definitely made me feel better. If I can just say so myself. And to end this podcast and put like a nice little ribbon on it, if our future son or daughter were to listen to this podcast one day, what would you want he, she, or them to know?
That's a good question.
Are your eyes getting watery? Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
And I feel so far from you at the moment.
I think it's, I've thought about this before, but it just comes down to the thought that your mom and I have just wanted you for so long. I know, regardless of everyone else's individual circumstance, you know, it just really feels like a lifetime that we're waiting. You know, we just can't wait. Anyway, we just can't wait to have you here with us. And you know, we've wanted you for so long in our lives.
For me, as a process of us trying to come to this new chapter of our life and realize that we wanted to start a family was, how do you know you are ready to start a family? And my answer was that there's just so much love here. I feel like I'm ready personally. I feel like your dad's ready. And there's just so much love for us to give. And even your big bro, Benny, has so much love to give. I know that.
Yeah, and stuffed toys to share. don't bite them, though. Oak saliva.
And yeah, we just for them to know that already they are so, so, so loved and so cherished and adored. And yeah, we just can't wait for that next step.
Yeah. Faux show.
I'm getting teary eyed, so Benny. Jerome is trying to make a little joke. But one thing that I wanted to say to you, honey, before we leave off is thank you so much for joining me for our discussion today.
That's okay, I live here.
You had no choice. I roped you in and put a microphone in front of your face. And again, just like we said in the disclaimer at the beginning and throughout this episode, if you have any curiosity or if you have any questions about any of the topics that we've discussed personally, I surely do advise you to go and seek your own professional medical diagnosis. If you have any concerns about these topics for yourself, please encourage these healthy conversations, so that we can break the stigma around these topics of conception, pregnancy, fertility, infertility, women's health in general, really, and mental health. But in the meantime, if you do feel comfortable, and if there's anything that you want to ask us about our journey, about our, you know, our fertility specialists, our clinics, Jerome and I have discussed this already, and we'd be more than happy to jump on to the What Atta Said Instagram DMs. If you have any questions for us at all, we'll be happy to discuss with you and help you, right?
Yep.
So thank you again, Atas and Kuyas, for giving this episode a listen. This is episode 3 of a 4-part collaboration that we have with the with our What Kuya Said collaborators. So if you haven't already caught Audrey and Andy's episode, that is still live. Loy and Arvin's episode as well, that you can have a listen to, which is really insightful. And then this is just a little teaser to what's to come. We have Vinny and Aaron coming up next week, so make sure to catch that one.
Oh, what's their topic?
As well.
What are they talking about?
I'm not going to tell you. What? You got to listen. You got to listen. Again. Thank you so much for all of your love and support. Any little share, word of mouth to family and friends helps this little podcast a lot. I will catch you until then. And do you want to say bye to our Atas or Kuyas for now?
Yeah. Goodbye, everyone, till the next episode that I'm on. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you. Stop.
That was a good joke at the end. All right. See you guys.
Bye.